If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. You're listening to Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, plenty of things happening. Firstly, let's get back to this issue in reference to biological men, many of whom are calling themselves transgender women, which is at the center of this particular court case going on in the federal court at the moment between Roxy Tickle, the transgender woman, and Sally Grover's Giggle Women's Only website. Well, in the meantime, J.K. Rowling has come down very, very hard in recent weeks on new hate laws that have been instituted by the Scottish Parliament. And she dared the Scottish police to arrest her because she dared to say that transgender women were biological men. She dared to say something that was scientifically factual. So, what happened? Well, she's been bombarded not only by those who are out there protesting on her behalf, but also by the narcs, who are obviously jealous by her incredible success through the Harry Potter series and her books, but also because she dares to take a very biological female view of this issue. That is, where are their rights? What rights do they have when these biological men insist that they use their private facilities in women's toilets and women's change rooms? And it's a fair argument. So J.K. Rowling is going into bat for them, and I'm glad she's doing so. But for instance, she's just posted today some of the negative feedback that she's receiving, and she's decided to push back against the feedback. For instance, there was one tweet that she received that said, "It still amazes me that J.K. Rowling could literally be anything she wants in the world and has chosen to be a poster child of hate, sarcasm, disdain, and dissection in every sense of the word. You made billions off children, and hate will be your legacy." Well, firstly, making billions writing children's books should not be a shameful thing. She gave enormous joy, satisfaction, happiness, intrigue, and knowledge to millions of children around the world. That's what she did. She made billions off children. So you can't write children's books. What a dick. Anyway, in response to that, this is what J.K. Rowling has been saying. "It still amazes me that wanting safety and fairness for girls and women is your idea of hate." Touché. "It still amazes me that people are cheering on a medical scandal despite mounting evidence of harm." That's fact. That's exactly what's happening. Mounting evidence of harm by changing people's gender, especially as children. "And it still amazes me," J.K. Rowling writes, "how cowardly and complicit so many, including you, have been." Cop that, you narc. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
The facts, no spin or agenda.
Not enough with the lies, we need the facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's go to our talkback lines before we go any further. Dan has phoned in. Hi there, Dan.
How you going, Chris?
Good, thank you.
Just on this transgender thing, this is a little bit out there, right? It's a little bit left of field, but did you see the with Candace Owens saying that Bridget Macron is a man on Twitter?
Say those people again.
So the wife of Emmanuel Macron, the president of France,
yes,
is a man, is actually a transgender. And Candace Owens, you know that she's an American personality. She did an expose on this like a couple of months ago, or a month or so ago, just before she got sacked.
And the same thing is being said about Michelle Obama too.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's true or not, but what Candace Owens presented for Bridget Macron is, it's incredible evidence. And she shows photographs and the background of this guy. And he was a 40-year-old man when Emmanuel Macron was like a 13-year-old boy. And then my phone's battery's there, but I would encourage people just to have a look at the evidence because it's absolutely shocking and it's a big scandal.
But is it evidence? Look, I saw a story on what it was screened, and I didn't see what was screened, so I don't speak from any authority. But I did see that some of the complaints about what was screened was that it wasn't evidence at all. It was supposition.
Well, definitely, there's probably a bit of supposition in it, Chris. But she shows photos of Bridget Macron's brother, okay, who disappeared, and it's a dead ringer for Bridget Macron. And they show of this adult man, I forget his name, who was, he kind of just fell off the map, and then Bridget Macron appears. And when you see the photographs...
But that's supposition, that's not evidence.
No, but it's evidence insofar as they look so similar. And Candace Owens...
Yeah, but a lot of sisters and brothers look almost identical.
I agree. And I know it sounds wild. That's why I went in. I said, this is a bit, you know, out of left field. This is,
yeah, well, I haven't seen what was actually presented, so I can't really comment. But I didn't get the impression from the review that there was real evidence presented.
Well, she's done a couple of videos when this all broke, I don't know, like 6 weeks ago, a month ago, something. And I would encourage people to actually have a look because I thought this sounds crazy, right? And when I actually saw what she presented, I was convinced. And I'm hard to convince, Chris. When we have all this transgender nonsense going on in society, it's going on at the very top levels of power. There's these celebrity politicians trying to fool everyone. It's all a big game to them, Chris. And I think it's, you know, they just treat everyone for fools, and they want to shut the internet down because people are finding out what the hell's going on. And if you just watch the video that Candace did, she did a couple, it's extremely convincing, as crazy as it sounds, Chris. I just wanted to throw it out there.
Okay, you're throwing it out there. Look, I looked at, have you seen all the so-called evidence that people have had about Michelle Obama? There's been no evidence whatsoever. It's all been supposition and what words can be construed as by third parties, etc. It's bullshit, you know?
Well, there's a lot there that says Barack Obama is a gay man who was sort of on the scene in his day, right? And then where does Michelle come from? But I've heard other people say, no, she's a real person. These are a school photo. She was a girl, right? So I've heard both arguments, and I'm kind of not sure on that one. But the Bridget Macron... I'm telling you, that's a man. It's a man.
Yeah. Okay.
I know it sounds wild, Chris.
Anyway, you put it on the record. People can go find the evidence and find the footage for themselves and have a look and make their own decisions. And that's what they should do. Not listen to me just because. And I haven't seen it, so I qualify that before any go any further. Good on you, Dan. Thank you.
Cheers, Chris. Thanks.
Good on you, mate. Thank you very much for all of that. All right. Let's get down to more meatier issues. Israeli Prime Minister. By the way, I should mention, now I'm just checking to see whether we've still got this poll going. I just want to double check that. Let's have a look. Yes, we've got about 100 who voted, or well over 100 voted already. I won't give you the results because sometimes when you give the results halfway through an election, it can influence the result. So that's not a good thing to do. So I will tell you that what we were doing is trying to do two things with you, not just try and get you to answer a question. It was double trouble today. We're trying to get you to download an app that you probably haven't downloaded. So that was the first thing. And if you've downloaded it, thank you very much to the 100 or so people who've done so. Well done. Thank you. No doubt if we were giving you a little bit more time, you could have time to do it. If you haven't caught the first hour of the program, what we've done with the help of For My Say, that is numeral 4, MYSAY, is actually put a news question for you to determine a little bit about how you're thinking on one of the big issues of the week and a big, big issue in terms of the current decade. So firstly, go to your app store or wherever you get your apps from and download For My Say, numeral 4, MYSAY. And then you'll see the question that's on there, and it is, should Australia follow the UK's lead and ban all puberty blockers and surgery for children requesting gender transition? And as I've said a couple of times already in the first hour of the program, I'll get to the results when I can. I won't get to the results now or the ongoing results because it does tend to impact in any election the way people vote. But some really good numbers already, which is great. And we should be able to see how it goes and give you the answer tomorrow on the program, as I've mentioned. All right. As I say, let's get down to media things. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Tuesday that Israel will complete the elimination of Hamas's brigades, including the southern Gaza city of Rafah, and nothing will prevent this. Now, on Monday, he said a date had been set for an Israeli invasion of Rafah, where some 1.5 million Palestinians have taken shelter. But the United States has warned a ground operation in Rafah would be a mistake. Meanwhile, the Israeli military reports the highest number of trucks carrying aid entered the Gaza Strip on Tuesday since the start of the war in October. Now, to give us the latest, I'm joined now by former Army Intelligence Officer Shane Healy. Shane has worked in the Australian Army, as many of you know, as an intelligence officer and trainer, and as a private military contractor as well. He was deployed twice to Afghanistan, and in Australia was part of the Tactical Assault Group, where he was involved in several real-time terrorist incidents. He now works for both government and private firms in the area of threat assessment. And given the fact that we've got war left, right, and centre around the world at the moment, we'd like to have him regularly on this program. Shane Healy, thank you very much and welcome back to TNT.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you going?
Doing very, very well. There's so much global pressure for a ceasefire now against Netanyahu, but the Prime Minister plans for an attack on Rafah. Is a ceasefire likely anytime soon? Is his words about what his intentions are with Rafah likely to force Hamas to give a little bit more?
So the biggest stalling factor in the negotiations at the moment is that Hamas won't confirm the amount of live hostages they've currently got in Gaza. Now, there's a couple of things you can read into that. Have they moved some of the hostages outside of Gaza? And how many are still alive and how many have died? So that's the biggest stumbling block at the moment. The Israelis want proof of life and they want that number because obviously there's those protests in Israel and that's the biggest pressure that the citizens of Israel are putting on their government. So, but that's the sticking point for a ceasefire. Until Hamas do that, Rafah is on.
Having said that, the likely scenario would be, Shane, and I remember reading somewhere on the weekend from the Palestinian side of this conflict that they said that some of the hostages had left the region. That was something I did read, but I can't remember who it was connected to. Secondly, in terms of the numbers still alive, it would be a small number, wouldn't it?
You would think so, but again, as we've said for all along, it's their Hamas's leverage. So they're going to give, in some ways, they're going to give them more medical and food support than they will their own fighters because if without those hostages, what have they got at any level form of negotiation?
Fair point.
I would not be surprised, and information that I have is that there are hostages outside of Gaza.
Yeah. Have to be. Israel's killing of World Central Kitchen volunteers, it's received endless extensive media coverage, as it should. It's left the world shocked. Do you have any further updates on this part of the war?
Yeah, so on the 5th of April, the IDF came out and made a number of statements. One of them was that they'd sacked the two intelligence officers involved in the actual targeting of the vehicles. They're saying that the officers misidentified weapons and people moving from a convoy into a building, then back into the World Kitchen vehicles. Right. They tracked those vehicles. They believed that there were a senior Hamas member in one of the vehicles, which is the first one they targeted. They watched through a live video feed bodies be taken from that vehicle into the two other vehicles, which is why they continue to target those vehicles. It wasn't until they felt satisfied that everyone in that convoy was dead that they then claimed their battle damage assessment was they killed that Hamas fighter, which actually turned out to be the humanitarian employee. So that's the background to what the Israelis have released, what we know, And that actually makes sense as somebody who used to be a targeter and involved in the dynamic targeting space. It's pretty much how it would work with your collateral damage assessment prior to any strikes and then the battle damage assessment post-strike. So when governments are now saying the Israelis have got to be more forthcoming, well, they've been as forthcoming as any army I've ever heard of. You know, when I was in both Iraq and Afghanistan, the United States wouldn't have gone to that level and admit that they'd fired some officers.
Okay. Now, the Australian federal government appointed former ADF chief Mark Binskin to monitor Israel's response to its airstrikes, which killed Australian Zomi Frankham and six other World Central Kitchen aid workers. What can Binskin achieve? And has Binskin got any background in working as closely with the Israelis and that part of the Middle East?
No, he's going to achieve nothing. The Israelis don't want it. The Israelis didn't ask for it. This is just a Albanese Hail Mary. He's not the person I would have chosen. I did that role within the Australian military for over 10 years, and he was never part of any of the dynamic targeting. I would have chosen someone like maybe an Ian Langford or a Dan Fortune or Ben Pronk, who are former senior special operations officers that have commanded those type of operations. They know the F3 EAD cycle. They know the questions to ask. They know the intelligence surveillance reconnaissance platforms. They could have got some more answers. They have worked with Israel, but even then, the Israelis don't want them. It's my information out of Israel is this is just not a non-starter. And they're not apologetic. I was in Israel in 2005 working with one of their domestic agencies, and one of the Israeli members I was working with, David, said to me one day, Shane, you've got to understand we're a country of 8 million people with 400 million enemy surrounding us that want to push us into the ocean. They view this as, and we've discussed this, as an existential threat. They're not apologetic about it.
No.
Their view is we are fighting for the survival of Israel. And if a few Palestinians or Arabs die, so be it. Israel has got to survive. And, you know, that is the core center of gravity of all of Israel's decisions in this process. And if you don't understand that, or accept it, well, it's, the fact of the matter is Israel have always, even back in 05, just doing a private security detail of a diplomat, they viewed it as a combat operation because the Arabs want to kill us. That's their mindset. You know, the Mossad, the most active foreign intelligence service. You look at what they did after Munich, the Eric Banner movies are factual based ever. You know, they went, go to countries, they assassinate enemies of Israel. They just view this as our, we have to survive. And you've got to over put that into this. Yep. So seven aid workers died. That's unfortunate. And they're sorry. They were trying to kill the enemy.
War is nasty, no matter which way you want to look at it. I've got to take a quick break, Shane. I'll be back with you in just a short moment right here on TNT.
TNT's Jason Allborn.
The woeful display of digital ID being passed through the Senate without debate. That's the way politics seems to work in the Albanese, let's make everyone fair, let's have a voice and let everyone have their say. Unless we don't want you to say anything, then we'll introduce misinformation laws, digital ID, and then go and do a presser on Good Friday with our little puppy dog to get everyone to happy clap along at Albanese, the impossible worst prime minister. I cannot remember a prime minister who was so disinformed and so out of touch with the Australian people and their genuine fears about what this man, who is almost a clown, is doing to us here in Australia.
Weekends with Jason Allborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification. 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
It is TNT. Good to have your company. I've got Shane Healy, the former ADF intelligence officer, with me at the moment. Let's talk a bit of politics, if I can, Shane. Senator Wong and Defence Minister Miles have written a letter to the Israeli government urging that action be taken against Israeli Defence Forces personnel who did not act within the law. The latest reports indicate that Israel is yet to respond. Israel couldn't give a stuff what Australia thinks. And secondly, they are only doing this to appease their Muslim populations in their own electorates, aren't they?
So 100% Israel don't give a stuff about this. But I think it's to appease their own self in the mirror. Like the Muslim community, and I had dinner out there last night, and I've got many friends in that community, and they don't care about Penny Wong. They know she's a nothing. And this goes back to the fundamental religion of Islam and Judaism and Christianity, all in Jerusalem. Like, this isn't a today or yesterday problem. This has gone on for centuries. People have to understand the root cause of this, and Penny Wong and Richard Miles' virtue signalling isn't going to affect anything.
In a speech at the Australian National University on Tuesday, Penny advocated for recognising a Palestinian state, quote, one that can only exist side by side with a secure Israel. She argues it strengthens the forces for peace and undermines extremism. It undermines Hamas, Iran, and Iran's other destructive proxies in the region. Shane, I don't get this. They want to go and give this statehood to Palestine. But there is absolutely nothing that says to me that there will be safety or peace in our time.
No, you've nailed it, Chris. And for the reasons I've previously discussed, but I'm a advocate of the two-state solution because neither side is going to stop fighting. Like, if you said to the Palestinians, you no longer have Palestine, they're never going to give up. And obviously the Israelis are never going to give up. So to say to one of those sides, you lose or you've lost your identity, that's just not going to happen. But like I said before, they view this as our birthright. You know, you look at Northern Ireland with Sinn Féin, and it's not as clear-cut as that. This will never stop. You know, both their religions, the centre of their religions is in the same location. It's so complex that, but as I've discussed, the only way it's going to end in any form and only time there's been peace is when you have two functioning governments.
I agree with all of that, but to think that it can happen within, you know, for instance, 2024 is farcical.
Oh, 100%. For a number of reasons which we've always discussed, but it's because it's so complex and there's so much give and take that where we're right now because of the Hamas attack, Israel in some ways are 100% right. They were attacked. They had their 9/11, so I understand and accept that. But also the Palestinians, for that overreaction, I accept that they're being smashed into oblivion as a people too. So it's gone too far down to think that this is going to be solved in weeks or months in 2024. You're 100% right, Chris.
Yeah. Okay. That I think, is why the opposition is saying what they're saying, which is, you know, there's no safety in any of those arrangements, and that might be the end goal. Netanyahu doesn't think it's the end goal, but that doesn't mean anything. I have a feeling that Netanyahu won't last the year out. Well, but do you agree with me that he won't last the year out?
Well, 100%. That's the whole reason the war's still going is because he's fighting for his political survival, and we've had that discussion. Yeah, that's as safe as it's going to be. The sun will rise tomorrow, that bit.
Okay, I've got two more questions for you. Australian Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill fronted a press conference on Tuesday where she was grilled by journalists, and rightly so, and forced to defend the government's commitment to Operation Sovereign Borders after another illegal boat arrival was detected in WA. See, the problem is they've cut a big swathe of money out of the budget for Border Patrol. The leaky boats just keep on coming, and not only that, the so-called refugees or asylum seekers tend to go all the way to the land. They make it on the land. So we're not doing the job that Sovereign Borders was meant to do, Shane.
Well, what else they're not telling you is that when the Albanese government came in, they changed some of the visa restrictions. So that was the green light for them to start bringing illegal aliens into the country. The second thing is the reason they're not finding the boats is the boat... are dropping the refugees off and then going back to pick more up.
Right.
So, that's the two biggest issues. And Senator Patterson made some excellent comments on Sky about this because he's 100% right. They've, as you've just said, they've decreased funding massively and they've taken away some of the Abbott government border policies and visa protection. So no onshore processing.
That's right. Actually important.
And then they're not backing the Navy or the military and Sovereign Borders up. So, and Claire O'Neill is just not up to the job.
Yeah, absolutely. One last question. People have been noticing what you've been writing about David McBride online. And there was one statement that you said that David McBride is not a whistleblower, but he's a criminal. I'm interested to get your understanding of what his crime is, and we know that he's awaiting sentence now and he may end up finding himself in jail. But I guess as a former member of the ADF, you'd be dirty on him for revealing information that you believe is illegally obtained.
I served with him. And in my capacity in Afghanistan as the targeting analyst, I worked, and I was also the intelligence analyst for the Rule of Law Cell. And I worked next to the legal officers. So the most powerful person in that organisation is the legal officer. Every operation has to go through the legal officer to make sure it's lawful. He had no moral courage during his deployments to say anything. He waited to get home at night after work and download documents from a computer to then give to a journalist.
Okay, but Shane, before, I'm hearing what you're saying, but he wouldn't do anything public about what he knew because, you know, if you put your hand up to be a whistleblower, it's likely to be blown off.
That's not true. And I've been very public, and as have others, but I'm actually talking at the point of incident. I can tell you that there were many people sent home during SOTG rotations for not being up to the job, for breaches of job. So I was very heavily involved because of my role. So if he had have thought that someone broke rule of engagement, law of armed combat, the JAPEL policy, he, as the legal officer, was in charge of the investigations and makes those recommendations. Then there's the Australian Defence Force Investigative Service, ADFIS, that come over and investigate. You know, I had to give many a statement for incidents over there. It's on the record where I've been quite vocal about an incident I was involved with, Hyatt Objective Heggett. So, you know, I've been very open and will continue to speak the truth of what I saw and when I served. Others do the same thing. Look at what Heston Russell did. He stood up for his soldiers when there was a claim made about someone killing a detained person at the back of a Chinook helicopter. Heston hasn't copped that. He actually sued and won from the ABC.
Yeah.
He chose, my biggest issue, he chose to not say a word until at night he gave it. And it's interesting that it's retrospectively he's kind of saying, oh, I wanted to help people. The other issue, and this is my biggest issue, as someone who has a mental health charity, Pegasus Connections, where I now help use my, you know, I wound up in a mental health facility, and I now use that experience to help other veterans not go through that. Not and the Morrison government came out and called all of us war criminals. That has labelled us in the family court. We've lost marriages. We've lost jobs. We've lost self-esteem. What pride do I have for the five rotations I did in Afghanistan when my prime minister called me a war criminal? He hated that, and he has no empathy or compassion or acknowledgement that that's the mental injuries he's caused. That's my biggest issue, is the fact that there were ways to do it. For example, Ben McKelvey, the author, has written three excellent books. Have a chat, Ben. He wrote, you know, McBride's
got... I've interviewed Ben a couple of times, yeah.
So a lot of my story is in his book, Fine Fix Finish, for example. And that's not the good. That's the good and the bad. You know, it ends with me in a mental health facility. So, you know, it's a warts and all. There is outlets and options. But that's my biggest issue is the fact that information that he stole, the government used to label all of us war criminals. Okay. And that is affecting us today.
All right. I appreciate you. You're entitled to your view, which is why I wanted to basically investigate what your view was, and we've heard it firsthand now, not third hand. It's good to hear. And mate, thank you very much for your analysis on all those other subjects as well. It's always greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Anytime, Chris. Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
No problem. Former intelligence officer with the ADF, now a consultant on risk assessment, both privately and publicly, Shane Healy. We might get David McBride on later this week, maybe even tomorrow, to talk to him about the criticism that Shane has placed against him and what David has to say. So we might do that on the program tomorrow. Make sure you're listening. Got to get a news break. We'll do that right now on TNT.
Here's what's making news.
TNT Radio News.
This is Jason Olborn with your news headlines. The Turkish government has imposed export restrictions on Israel, covering 54 product categories in response to the Gaza war. More than 100 people have died on a capsized ferry escaping a cholera outbreak off Mozambique. A CIA and former FBI official has admitted in an undercover recording that the FBI can jail anyone. Gold and silver prices continue to enthrall investors, with gold breaking another peak at US$2,356.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
It is TNT Radio. Thank you so much for your time. We're getting to Alex Zaharoff-Reut now, who, of course, is from techadvice.life, because it is Cyber Wednesday, the time when you get to hear about all the latest products, all the latest devices, the updates that are coming your way, and things that are assisting your technological world or not assisting your technological world. Let's say hello to Alex firstly. Alex Zaharoff-Reut, welcome back.
Really great to be here and to join you again.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, we've got a very special segment today because you have found for us the CEO of Zapbat, Charlie Welch. Let's introduce him to the program. Charlie, welcome to TNT.
Great. Thanks. Great for having me. Excited to be here. And good, Alex, thanks good for to having me again. Here. It's been great to keep up with you all these years.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, Alex, just explain for our listeners and our viewers right now why it's important to have Charlie on the program now. We're breaking new ground, aren't we?
Absolutely. Look, we're going to learn a bit more about it from Charlie in just a moment, but he's created a battery that can recharge in 20 minutes. It's got 15 to 20,000 charge cycles. So it's like at least 10 times the lifespan of the number of charges you can do with your battery. Normally, your battery in your phone is 500 to 1500 charge cycles and then it dies. And this battery is almost indestructible. So we'll hear the rest from Charlie.
Yeah. Okay, let's start, Charlie. We've all heard the stories, the horror stories about lithium ion batteries catching fire. They do so on e-scooters. They do so in cars. They're extremely hard to put out, along with hours-long recharging times, depending on the cycles you have or the size of your battery, it can be a pain in the butt and simply and utterly impractical. So how have you turned that around?
Yeah, great question. And this story is actually quite a bit different from other ones in the battery space, where You know, my previous background was building battery systems for the military here in the U.S. for a whole variety of applications, aerospace, underwater, you name it. And what we've done is build this software that allows this battery that was has been invented almost 30 years ago called lithium titanate or lithium titanium oxide, originally developed for the Navy, to basically be completely available across the market now. As Alex said, it's faster, it's safer, and the most important thing is that it's proven. And so in partnership with Toshiba, what we've built is this battery operating system so that the process of adopting this amazing technology is extremely easy now. Because historically, adopting any new battery technology is just a broken process. It can be years, everybody has to redesign their products for it, and it can be extremely expensive. And so what we've built is this operating system that allows this amazing chemistry that Toshiba has made and has been using in DoD and infrastructure applications for the last 20 to 30 years to now apply to anything, e-bikes, consumer products, agriculture products, things to power your home, anything in between. And the process of adopting it be really seamless and easy. And I was just catching with Alex earlier. I'm actually delivering one of these as we speak right now for an e-bike application for a customer, where they're now going from their standard e-bike battery to one that can charge in under 20 minutes. It'll last 10 times as long, and it won't catch fire, which is a huge benefit for them. And so instead of inventing this miracle battery, we're trying to accelerate the adoption of this better technology that's been out there for quite a while.
So with the battery operating system, what that really means is that companies don't have to re-engineer their entire product range to suit a new type of battery. They can simply use your batteries and plug and play, basically. There's nothing for them to do.
Exactly. Spot on. So instead of going to a company and saying, hey, let's take in the next couple of years to redesign everything in the hopes that you love what this battery can do, we can now say, don't change a single thing. Just tell us if you want faster charging, longer lifespan, and it to be completely plug and play.
So I guess the next question is, how soon will we see this in our power tools, in cars, in e-scooters? I mean, I want to see it in my phone. I want to see it in my computer. I've got a Signet battery pack, 27,000 milliamp hours, and I've had it for a couple of years. And actually, I had it replaced under warranty once already. It no longer has enough power to charge my laptop. It just instantly dies. It's got enough power to charge my phone, but I wish I could have that battery lasting 10, 20, 30 years. I wish it was powered by your tech.
Absolutely. You're going to start to see it everywhere. And more importantly, you can actually go on our website and order samples for a whole variety of different products right now. You know, the goal is that to put this in full mass scale production by the end of the year in everything from agriculture products to mobility products and kind of everything in between. And from what we've seen, as you said, the appetite for something that is capable of this, but not only has been doing it for the last 20 years, is insurmountable. Companies have been reaching out to us every day asking if this can apply to their product, which we say absolutely. So beginning of next year, you're going to start to see it everywhere.
So that's interesting. Because as soon as I heard about this, I thought, gee, if you can commercialize this, you can apply it to power tools, you can apply it to computers, cars, e-scooters, phones. And therefore, the question is, if you've got that good a battery technology in a phone, can you therefore transfer that battery onto your newer phone?
You could. So we're not focusing on those markets right now because they're very expensive to integrate into. We're actually starting with markets like power tools, like things like that, where we can be in market in a fraction of the time. But you're absolutely right. Like, we're actually working on products where the battery is going to outlast the product itself. And you know, like, I actually have a leaf blower battery sitting next to me right now that we brought for this demonstration that will fully charge in about 9 minutes compared to the current couple hours it takes to charge. But and again, we like to say this over and over just to repeat it, but this technology has been out there for quite a while. You know, it is, you know, the military has used it in a whole variety of applications. The key in this operating system is that we wanted to make it accessible and kind of democratize access to a better battery technology that people can adopt quickly instead of this huge promise that is possibly a decade away. We want to put better technology in people's hands quickly.
Alex.
Now, because it's been used by the military. I mean, they used it because it didn't explode when the battery got damaged. And in fact, we've seen those buses that have the so-called solid state batteries where they've been catching fire on top. And so you've basically got the benefits of these solid state batteries, which don't have the liquids that can touch each other and explode. I mean, you basically got those benefits now. But so happy for you to comment on that. But the other big question, of course, is how much does this technology cost? Is it going to be more expensive? And how quickly, if it is more expensive, how quickly will the prices come down?
Yeah, on the first point, correct. Safety, we think, is going to become one of the most important topics. And when it comes to safety, it's all about track record, and it's not about claims. And, you know, Toshiba has one of the best track records on the planet when it comes to safety. I mean, we've done almost everything to try and catch these batteries on fire to little success, or I should say to much success of them not going into thermal runaway due to their lack of carbon, and we can go down that rabbit hole. But it will be slightly more expensive. You know, in most cases, we're looking to be about 1.5 to 2x the price. Granted, you're getting 10 plus times the lifespan of most products, so the amortization of the cost over time is quite a bit lower, but upfront it is slightly more expensive.
So, Charlie, I want to ask you just one last question, just in terms of why we haven't heard of or seen similar projects like yours on the market. Why haven't people taken or got access to this military grade lithium product and done what you're doing?
Yeah, two part. I'd say one is, you know, my background is very unique. You know, I've worked with dozens of chemistries like this that have been overlooked over time just because they're very expensive and very difficult to work with. Lithium titanate is the perfect example of a technology that is truly better, but the barrier to entry for a lot of markets just became too high. And then the other side is building this true operating system was no small feat. You know, what we've been demoing for companies is mind-blowing for them. It's a complete breakthrough, in all honesty, where I can take, so we did this demo actually for Toshiba, where we took one of their batteries and we turned it into a whole variety of products that were completely different voltages, all live. So we said, we're going to take your great chemistry and it's going to become a power tool battery, an e-bike battery, and all these things in front of you. And the operating system is going to allow the battery to turn into these different products so we can approach these markets successfully. And that was not easy to complete. Those kind of operating systems in the battery space have never existed. And we think that allowing that flexibility for these types of technologies is kind of the key, is giving customers access to not worry about the battery side, tell us how fast you want it to charge, you know, what do you want it to do? And then after that, it's all about your product. And so that kind of twofold approach, I think, has been key to solve this.
Well, it sounds so exciting at the very least. And all you've got to do is tell Alex and I when you're floating so we can purchase some shares and we'll be fine.
Absolutely.
Charlie, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Likewise. Thanks all for having me.
All right. The founder and CEO of ZapBat, that's ZAPBAT, Charlie Welch. Alex, at the very least, what an exciting concept.
Yes. And look, I mean, I can see Charlie's still there, but he was talking in one of his videos about how Toshiba has one of these batteries in a robot from about 30 years ago. They haven't had to replace that battery yet. It's still working to this day. And that is just revolutionary because the batteries in our devices die. They start expanding. I mean, the ACCC's recalled batteries from LG for the home. They've been telling, don't leave the batteries charged in your phones or in your e-scooters. And we're hearing about it all the time. Cars catching fire, e-scooters catching fire, phones catching fire in people's pockets. I mean, obviously it's the phone side of things is much rarer, but the e-scooter things, it's becoming a crisis. And, you know, as Neuromancer's author William Gibson said, the future has already been invented. It just hasn't been widely distributed yet. He's a wonderful example of the future. We can see it. It's coming. And within the year, we're going to have them in stores and you'll be going to Bunnings and wherever else to buy them.
Yeah, quite amazing. Got to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about some of your general topics this week, some of the latest and greatest in tech and cyber. We'll do so after a quick break with Alex Zaharoff-Royd from techadvice.life. And of course, a colleague here at TNT on his Saturday night program. This is TNT.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, Nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
Even the mighty might not see it coming. It's prediabetes, and it captures one in three adults. But you can escape. Take the one-minute prediabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
You're listening to Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, Alex, plenty more to talk about in the world of technology. Let's start with Hisense. Now, Hisense also launches some new TVs. Tell us about these. They've got a monster size television, have they?
Yeah, well, both Samsung and LG have announced 98-inch size TVs. When that's compared against a 75, I mean, it is much bigger. But Hisense is going to, well, has announced the 100-inch TV, and they're also bringing a 110-inch model coming later this year. You're going to need a house or a room big enough.
Well, listen, I've got an 85-inch television, and people laugh when they come over to my place thinking, that is as big as a football field. What do you think you're doing? And it is massive. Like, I look at it and I have to move my head to watch everything. It's massive, 85-inch. But to think that you'd watch a 110-inch model is amazing.
Absolutely. And look, all of these new TVs, at least the ones from Hisense, they're IMAX certified. So they're designed to give you the best pictures. They actually have a new remote control. I mean, Samsung had a remote control, but the panel was on the back. So you had to sort of turn the remote control upside down. This one's got the solar panel on the front, which is much more convenient. You charge it via USB-C as well, because it won't always get everything it needs from the lights in your house, and you won't necessarily have it in the sun, but no need to change AA or AAA batteries anymore. And, Hisense launched their TVs on the same day as Samsung launched their TVs. And of course, LG launched them a couple of weeks ago as well, which we spoke about. So there's going to be plenty of competition in all your Best Buys and, Harvey Norman's and JB Hi-Fi's and Boots, all the different stores that sell these TVs. You're going to have great competition. And all of last year's TVs, I hear ads on the radio that they're clearing them out, so you can get some great bargains on last year's TVs, which are still fantastic in their own right.
Yeah. We've reached a stage, have we not, Alex, just in terms of televisions. And I have this discussion with lots of people, especially when they come over and see my 85-inch television. We have these discussions about televisions have got to the stage now where they do absolutely everything you need them to do. They're so smart, it's not funny. They give you everything that we, listen to on radio, or we listen to on the internet, or, the TNTs of the world. There are people who will send me photos of watching TNT on their massive television screens, which is great. But have we reached the stage where enough's enough? Like, how much more can a television be?
Well, the funny thing is, funny you mention that, because no, we haven't. I mean, the TV makers are always coming up with new ways. And look, you can upgrade an older TV with an Amazon Fire Stick, a Google Chromecast with TV, or an Apple TV device to get all the latest catch-up TV, to have YouTube so you can watch TNT Live, radio.live on your television. But the thing is, Samsung's new TVs, and both Samsung and LG were very strong on talking about AI. Well, on the latest Samsung TV, the new AI technology, when the ball is, spinning across the field, it's using AI to make that motion super smooth. So often on TVs, you'll see this jerkiness as the ball is going across. So that's one area. So for sports, we've got the Olympics coming up. There's always a big push to buy new TVs during the Olympics. You've got these new 8K televisions from Samsung that upscale older, regular TV or DVDs or, 4K television to even sharper levels. And again, they're doing that through AI. Another great thing is this Voice Booster Pro. If you've ever watched a movie and there's just too much outside noise or the music's too loud, this is specifically boosting the spoken dialogue. I mean, a lot of people put on the subtitles because they want to be able to hear what's being or understand what's being said. So this is another feature. And you can buy soundbars that will do this, but this is built into the television. Another thing is people buy soundbars and then they have to mute the TV because often the soundbar and the TV are a different brand.
Yes.
And then the sound coming from the TV and the soundbar is like a millisecond apart.
Correct.
Well, what's which is very annoying. And look, you do have a soundbar, so you do hear the sound from the soundbar. But what if you could have the sound from the TV and the soundbar working together to give you even better sound? Well, that's what Samsung soundbars and new TVs do. It's like having an extra speaker in your multi-speaker setup,
right.
And that just makes sense. And then we have this thing called a music frame, which is looks like a 12-inch vinyl record. It's about this thick. It's about the thickness of about an inch and a bit, but it's a speaker, and you can put multiple versions of this around the TV with artwork in different parts of the house. It's a bit like that Sonos where you can have the same music playing in different rooms or different music playing, and it doesn't look like a giant speaker. So there's lots of reasons why. I mean, you don't have to upgrade your TV every year, every 5 or 6 years, but there does come a time when you want a bigger screen and you're going to get better quality colors, sharper imagery, smoother motion, and the TV makers are always doing what they can to make the apps snappier and faster, to make everything smoother, and to want to charge you several thousand dollars for a new TV.
Yeah. All right. Home security maker Swan has just launched its new AI Drive Home Shield technology.
Yes. Now imagine, so people know that you can get those Ring doorbells and that, from different companies, Arlo has them, and you push the doorbell and you're not home, you're at work, and the phone rings and you can see who's there at the door.
I do this all the time. Yeah.
But if you're on air, Chris, and someone rings you right now and your wife and kids are not around, you're not going to be able to answer, right? You're busy in a meeting. So what this does is it uses generative AI to speak to the person and tell them, hey, Chris is upstairs, he's busy. Look, just leave the package by the door. And it's having a conversation and it's generating that conversation based on stuff that you've told it, but also based on its own intelligence. And it's using Amazon's cloud services. And Amazon has invested $4 billion into a company called Anthropic. They are a competitor to OpenAI's ChatGPT. I mean, Microsoft invested $10 billion there. And so they have this system where it sounds like you're speaking to somebody, whether it's in an Australian accent or an American accent, whatever the accent that you want, and they're having a conversation. And, I've got this demo on my website, which was from CES. It wasn't me that filmed it. And there is a delay between the Australian person speaking to the doorbell and the response, because it was a demo system and there was 200,000 people in CES and all the phone networks were clogged. But, someone said, oh, your house is on fire. And the guy says, oh, well, the computer says, well, can you please tell the neighbors and call the fire brigade because I'm not there. Yeah. And it's like, oh, can you please leave this? I've got a package for you. Well, can you just leave it by the front door? I'm not able to come to the door right now, but I'll be down in a few minutes. Or someone's trying to sell you something. And so the doorbell is saying, look, I'm not interested in your whatever you're selling. So,
Nick off.
Nick off sort of thing. So it makes it look as though you're home and it's your home robot in your doorbell that's
fantastic,
doing the talking for you.
AI Drive Home Shield by Swan with a double N. And finally, I've only got 2 minutes left. Google launches Find My Device. There's a bit of copycatting going on here.
Yes. Well, Apple has had this for several years now. And if you've lost your phone you can't find it, what happens is that all the other iPhones in the area can ping your device and know where all the devices are. So Google has launched this in the US. It's come to the rest of the world a little bit later, but it's in the US and Canada from more or less this week onwards. You can locate offline devices. You can keep track of everyday items with compatible Bluetooth tags. And you've got that anti-tracking stuff we talked about last week as well. You can find nearby items. You can pinpoint devices at home if you have a Google Home Nest speaker. And you can also share accessories with friends and family. So that's a bit of a catch up with Apple. It'll work on any Android device with Android 9 and upward, so it'll be widely available, and it's a very handy feature. You can find stuff if you've lost it with great precision.
I lose things all the time, so this is a great idea for me. Fantastic. And I'm a Samsung nut. Alex, fantastic. I've just run out of time, but thank you very much. And I was quite impressed with Charlie Welch, but what a wonderful product. The whole world will be looking at the progression of that company.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there'll be copycats out there, but you know, these guys have really developed something first class, and I can't wait to buy products with it. I can't wait to have my battery for my computer lasting for years and years rather than a couple of years and it's dead.
Yes, exactly. Won't that be a change? Thank you, mate. Much appreciated. We'll be watching your program Saturday night. What time? Australian standard
6
time?
6 p.m. We're 6 back p.m. to 6 p.m. Dallas 7 over. And I've got all these stories and more at techadvice.live right now.
Fantastic. Thank you, mate. Much appreciated.
Bye-bye.
Good on you. There you go. That's Alex Zaharoff-Royd. Very quickly for tomorrow, we've got the one and only Mr. Libertarian in New South Wales himself, John Ruddick. We'll also get David McBride on, and apparently he does want to answer Shane Healey's criticism of him over those charges. So we'll give David a fair chance to reply to Shane Healey as well, and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. We'll leave you in the capable hands of Sonia Poulton. Very busy day. We'll come up and tell you the results of that poll, that question that we asked about transgender puberty blockers and also surgery. Well, we've got some answers already, and we'll give you the full results at the beginning of the program. But make sure you're watching, all right? Make sure you're watching. We'll be able to tell you all about that. This is Chris Smith on TNT.